The Everything Home Podcast is brought to you by Helping the People. We're a real estate company, home resource center, and nonprofit organization that's disrupting the home buying and selling experience by providing relationship-based real estate with a socially conscious purpose. We match home buyers and sellers with our preferred realtors, and 25% of their commission is donated to our Homes for Veterans program, which financially assists veterans who want to buy a home or need home improvements for their service-connected injuries. We created this program as a way for Americans to honor the men and women of the United States military for their service to our nation and the sacrifices they've made. So if you're looking to buy a home or it's time to sell yours, please give us a call at 833-694-6636 or visit our website at helpingthepeople.org. Not only will you be working with our realtors, who are among the top 1-5% in Arizona and the greater San Diego area, you'll be changing the life of a veteran while we change yours. That's 833-694-6636 and helpingthepeople.org. We look forward to you becoming a part of our very unique community.
Welcome to Everything Home, where we talk about life, stuff, and balance. Your home is the base for everything in your life, from the structure and contents to what goes on inside and within yourself. To make sure this foundation is solid as can be, we invite a special guest to share something you will find enlightening, inspiring, and entertaining. Now here's your host, Michelle Swinnick. Enjoy the show.
Well, I'd like to start the show with something funny that I read. And I heard about this elderly couple that had been married for about 60 years. They were at a church fellowship and somebody asked them the secret of their success. The man told how he always treated his wife with respect and he took her on trips all over the world. He said, in fact, for our 25th anniversary, I took her to Beijing, China, and everyone kind of clapped. And someone spoke up and said, well, what'd you do for your 50th anniversary? He said, I went back and picked her up. That's good, huh?
Nice.
Oh, that was funny. So today we are going to do a little real estate talk, except we're going to change venues, locations. I'm talking to Dave Kashagan with HomeSmart. He's out in the wonderful land of sunny San Diego, California. How are you today, Dave?
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me, Michelle.
I appreciate it. Yeah, Dave and I are friends for many, many years. He used to live out here, was doing investing in real estate, and then moved over to California and has hit a home run out there. Dave's your guy, real estate.
Yes.
How did that come up, that name come up? Because somebody said, oh, they kept saying, hey, who am I going to, who do you know that can help me? Who's the expert investor? And you're like, no, Dave's your guy.
Exactly. Well, there's another part to that. And that is nobody can pronounce my last name, Kashagan. So I just got rid of the last name and just put Dave's your guy.
That's smart marketing.
Right.
Since you've left, you've picked up little boys. I think that the what are they, 5 and 7 now?
Yes. My oldest son, Dax, is 7 years old, and my youngest, Drew, is 5. And, they keep us burned out.
And your wife, she's doing great, Darcy, right?
Absolutely, yep. My wife, Darcy, stays at home with them and, takes care of those guys and me, I guess, when I'm not working. But yeah,
which in your line of work, you work all the time, especially since you're focusing primarily on the investors and investment properties, correct?
That is my specialty for sure. As you probably know from our workings with each other in the past, I have a highly analytical brain. So you put me in front of a spreadsheet and I can, analyze anything. So I do really enjoy, looking at buy and hold investments or development or flip properties and those sort of things. So I do spend a lot of time with investors, but that does tend to translate well when working with, your just traditional buyers and sellers as well, because ultimately their home is an investment, long term. And so, you know, I can use that skill set to, you know, really coach them on, you know, how to think of it as an investment. And so I've had good results in just, you know, having traditional buyers and sellers feel good about working with me because of that background.
So California real estate's very different than anywhere else pretty much on the planet. And
yes.
I'm sure right now, just how it is here in the Phoenix metro area, we are in a market where we've never seen before, and a lot of it's uncharted waters, basically. So we've got low inventory, we've got housing prices that are starting to go high enough where first-time home buyers in certain areas are priced out of the market, and as rates are starting to go up, you're starting to see some people backing off. A lot of investors here aren't really looking at the fix and flips as much because the margins aren't there. What are you seeing in California? Pretty much the same thing, totally different. What's going on over there?
Well, it'd be cool, I think, to give a little compare and contrast. I'm not sure if do you know how much inventory you currently have in Arizona?
The other day, the agents told me, I think the amount of listings was something in like the 14,000 range for single family homes. We didn't include townhomes or condos in it, but single family was about around maybe 14 and change. So it's very low where it should be.
Okay. So I'll give you some perspective. So right now we are at 4,000 single family homes in all of San Diego.
Oh my
County.
God.
Yeah.
And that's for how many people? How many people are in that area?
So we're just under, you know, San Diego County is just under Maricopa County. So you guys are ahead of us in population, but not by much. As far as people, I mean, I couldn't give you, it was probably 5 million or something like that, or, you know, just under 5 million in the entire county. Total inventory, if you include condos, townhomes, single family, you know, modular homes, mobile homes, tents, you name it.
throw in a tent. Yeah, just don't worry. We'll put in a tent. We need the numbers to go up.
Yeah, exactly. We gotta make it look, you know, optimistic here. Total inventory as of this morning is 5,300. That's everything. 5,300 in the entire county. Now we believe it or not, we're up 1,000 units since February 1st. We were only at 4,300 total as of February 1st. So to give you some perspective on, you know, okay, what's normal, what's not normal. So we peaked out last year, the highest inventory of all homes, again, condo, townhome, single family, last August was our peak at 6,400 homes on the active market. And the highest we've ever had over the last 6 years was in 2014, and that was 8,400 homes. So that's the most inventory we've had in the last 6 years. And really the big year, the big turnaround for our equity and pricing and whatnot in San Diego was 2013. I'm sure it was in Arizona as well. But that 2012 to 2013 shift seemed to be when we had a massive appreciation. And then it's clipped along pretty regularly every year at about, you know, between 5% and 7%. Which is still kind of high. You know, I mean, if you're over six, you're over the high average over the, you know, course of time. But it's definitely very tight. It is getting more unaffordable. I mean, I just put in an offer with a client over the weekend for darn near $750,000 on a twin home, which is basically an attached, you know, like a townhome basically. It's a 2,000 square foot townhome, and it's four bedrooms, so it's good size. But still, to the idea that you have a small backyard and an attached wall to your neighbor, and you're paying almost, you know, $750,000 for it is just kind of crazy to me.
Well, the thing is, you get to a point where you look at the cost of the house, the amount of money for the down payment, perhaps the amount of money needed to bring it up to where you think it should be. And you get to the point where you can't justify making that type of a mortgage payment for that that type of product that you're buying. So then you have that cutoff point and that's what happened here. If you remember back in like 2006, I think it was, and the price of the homes that look like they should be bulldozed down got to the point where you, that was the only thing you could afford. And you're like, I don't want to live there. It doesn't look safe or clean or anything else, but that's all I can afford. And you just get to that point where I'll just where I am.
Right. No, for sure. And I think that is the problem when markets get oversaturated with just continuous price increases is when junk homes aren't being sold for justified prices. Now I do see that when you talk about investors and flips, there's no doubt it's really hard to find flips here. And the only way you find them is usually direct to seller. You know somebody, you get referred to somebody who's got a beat up house and just wants to unload it. You're not going to find them on MLS. It goes on MLS and there's no flips to be had. I mean, people are either buying them for themselves or they're buying and holding, and that's the best they can do. And they still have to put $40,000-$50,000 into it just to get it rent ready. So off market is the only way to get a quote unquote deal out here, which I'm sure it's kind of similar in Arizona because, there's probably far more investors than there are inventory for investments. So it just becomes a race to bid up the price and whatnot, which is not really good for any investor anyway. And I don't like participating in that myself. So I don't do a lot of that as far as chasing that, and nor do my clients. So we're always looking for other ways to find that type of inventory before anybody else does. And even then it's still hard. It's, I'm talking my flip investors I probably work with maybe a couple times a year tops. And that's just because I happen to be stumbling across something that comes my way. But otherwise, across the board, inventory is definitely low. But at the same time, there's still a lot of buyers. And I will say that the overall health of the real estate market here is still very, very good. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of equity here. There's not a lot. All the loans are extremely scrutinized, like across the country, I'm sure they are. But I haven't seen a buyer that hasn't had, DNA testing and, everything else done to them, in order to qualify for a loan, from that standpoint, I read a statistic that it was 80% of homeowners had over 20% equity. So from just a health standpoint of, hey, if we do have a slowdown or a downturn, I don't expect a 2008 to happen again, just simply because there's so much equity in the market. Because at the end of the day, if somebody's got that much equity, they're most likely not going to walk away from it. And even if they had to sell, if they get into that position, they have enough room where they can adjust the pricing. And yes, they might not get, maybe their down payment back in full, but they might be able to get some of it back if they got into a struggle and had to, and just were forced to sell. But they wouldn't be a short sale and they wouldn't be necessarily a foreclosure. They would have a way out, which is ultimately what creates a healthy market.
So if you've got an inventory shortage and it seems like it's that for a while, the only way to cure that is provide more product, which is people need to be selling. They need to be building, and it doesn't sound like more people are selling. Is there new construction, or is it very limited?
Well, new construction, so that's what's also really tough about California is the land prices are so darn expensive that any new construction you come across are going to be the highest priced homes in the market. So the affordability of that new construction, I think the cheapest new construction I've seen in the last year or so was, pushing $1 million. It's at $800,000-$900,000. And so that's not helping all the little people, the first time buyers and whatnot, and it's just not enough. There's just not enough land to go around that's even affordable, to be able to buy, that land and develop it and sell affordable homes to those people. So, any new homes for more starter type homes, and believe it or not, so the median home price here is $600,000 for a single family home. That's in San Diego County, but a lot of people, if they just can't buy something in San Diego County, they'll drive 45 minutes north to Temecula, and commute, and you can get something up there for probably around 400, between 400 and 500, so they can get a little bit more house for their money, you know, up north. But then you got to commute. You might be in traffic for an hour and a half just to get to your job, which is I would never do. But a lot of people do it, and that's kind of the only way out. And the new inventory that is even affordable is in areas like Temecula, Marietta, all those little smaller towns up north, which ultimately, you know, they're very nice, but they kind of start eliminating the luxury of being in San Diego because those are more desert type cities. So, you know, you're really, you know, you're going in hotter areas in the summer. So the attractive, you know, how attractive they are to go there just isn't as big of a draw as San Diego.
Well, and at that point, if you're living in a hotter area in the desert, if you can change your location because you've got a different job, you might as well live in Phoenix because it's cheaper,
100%,
right?
Yes. 100%,
and
yes.
As long as you can find a job and you don't have to make as much because you're not paying as much. So it's you get to the point where once you're in California, if you go too far inland, you might as well make the jump and just get on the 10 and keep going and end up here.
100%, yes. And I actually have clients that moved to Arizona. I just had a client move to Arizona last month. And the nice thing is because I started my career there and I know it extremely well, I was able to be here with her and coach her on the areas over there and then connected her with an agent over there. And then, you know, we kind of created her game plan from here. And I was able to help her with that because I knew the area so well. But that was, we hunted for her around here. She was trying to buy her kind of final home because she's retired and she was selling her current residence and going to pay cash for the next place. And she was limited on her budget and you just couldn't find something, you know, for, you know, 180, 190,000, or under 200. And so she ended up buying, in Maricopa, you know, just south of Phoenix there. She could buy a nice home for 160,000 that's maybe 10 years old and still close to everything she needs. And she can retire and, you know, gas prices over there are cheaper. Just the overall cost of living is cheaper. The income tax, everything. So yeah, if I had to move to Temecula Marietta, I would probably just move to Phoenix.
So are you finding that a lot of people in California are just set up with the cost of living there because of the taxes and the property taxes that are involved where they've lived there for long enough and they say, you know what, there's just a point where I'm done doing this. I've been here 10, 20, 30 years. Maybe the kids are gone. It's time to move on. Is that a lot of the reasons why you're seeing people that are selling since it is kind of, like I said, the inventory is limited as to who's selling?
Yep. Yeah. I just in the last year, I've probably had 3 or 4 clients that I sold their property and they ended up moving elsewhere. And actually I'd say 3/4 of them went to Arizona. And most of them are, you know, they're retired age. Right. And so, they get to a point where like, yeah, I could live here. I could stay here, but my quality of life is just not going to be as good. I'm going to be penny pinching a little more. And when they sell here and they move over there, they pay cash for a place, their pension or their 401k goes a lot further. They don't have a mortgage anymore. You know, they're like, oh my gosh, my whole world just opened up. Now I can travel. Now I can, you know, golf every day if that's what I want to do, whatever it is. Right. They just have a lot more freedom to.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Now I don't know. All of a sudden it went bleep and then somebody came on, said something that I didn't understand, and boom, you were gone. So I said, I guess we were not supposed to finish that sentence. I don't know. You know, this technology stuff is just, you know, the more we rely on it, the less reliable it actually does become. So it gets to the point where, you know, I still love my pen and my pieces of paper because even though everyone says, Michelle, you don't need a to-do list, just take a picture of it or, you know, use the notes on your phone. And I said, well, what happens if the phone, the battery dies or for some reason I click and I can't get to it? And I have no problem. I take my little post-it and I have the little notes in my pocket when I get to do my things. And, you know, I don't seem to have a lot of those problems. So it's a wonderful tool when it works. You know?
Yes. No, I've always said it's either your best friend or your worst enemy.
Oh, jeez, man. So it's, and the problem is you, regardless of how technologically advanced you are, you have no control over it. So it doesn't really matter if I was a rocket scientist and I clicked on the thing, if it not going to work, it doesn't matter if I'm the one that designed the system, basically, almost. So if it doesn't feel like working today, it's not going to work.
Right.
So that's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. All right. So we left off. We were talking about the fact that a lot of people are moving out, but still you still have an inventory issue. I mean, 5,300 homes, in putting that into perspective with what we have here, it's about the same population. And you guys actually probably have a little bit more people. And you have one third of the inventory, and your median home price, if you're at 600,000, ours is 250. Okay. So just think about those two different worlds. I mean, you couldn't be more opposite than one another. I mean, that is an extreme contrast. 600,000 to 250, one third of the inventory. Yep. But on the other side, you have a lot of higher income jobs. So it gets put into perspective, but still, I mean, what are you seeing as the potential to have some sort of resolution to the inventory? And if it hasn't really picked up since 2013, is it ever going to get to the point where it's equal or stable or fluid?
That's a great question. I don't personally have an answer for the inventory problem. I know the people that do want to stay here, the big problem they have with wanting to sell is, maybe they do want to sell, maybe downsize or whatnot, but they don't see anything that they like to move into. So their problem is also inventory related. I can't sell because I don't know where I'm going because I don't see anything that attracts me. So then they end up just staying put. So I don't know what the answer is, because like I said, even with the new building going on, those are all high-end stuff. So there almost has to be an exodus, if you will, which, you know, maybe the conspiracy theory in me is we got cut off before because, you know, the California powers that be heard us talking about everybody leaving to Arizona. But I don't know. I don't know how to solve it. To make anything more affordable, because it just seems like the only thing I can think of is that if interest rates keep rising, then something has to give, prices have to give. But then that also means that we may still end up with a shortage simply because people will just decide not to sell. Because it's not like people have to sell, especially if they have a lot of equity and they're in a good position. But I don't know. I don't really have an answer. I haven't seen an answer. But it is an affordability issue, which I also think is why, even though the inventory is dramatically different from here in Arizona, I do think that one of the big reasons why the inventory is so dramatically different is because people don't move as often here because they just can't afford it, right? So I have first-time buyers that are buying $500,000 and $600,000 homes. The only way they're able to do that is a gift funds from their parents, you know? And so then when they do that, they're not moving for at least a decade. And then by the time they do move and get raises in their jobs and are more established, they still need their equity out of their home in order to make that move up down the road, but they just don't move as often. So I think in Arizona, because the price points are more affordable, you can move up from that $150,000-$200,000 townhome into a single family home kind of easily. It's not as big a deal. So you have a lot more fluidity in the market. But even the median home price of a condo townhome here is $400,000. So even your entry level product, you know, is $400,000, and it's just a lot of money. I sold a home in La Jolla, which of course La Jolla is a luxury location. It's beautiful spot. But a one bed one bath condo, 700 square feet, sold for $438,000. You know, that's expensive, you know.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
And I get it.
And
that
small,
really,
very small.
Yeah, very small, absolutely. And even I want to say the most affordable pricing, like near me in Rancho Bernardo, you could get a one bed, one bath about that same size for about $300,000. So that's the difference of being inland a little further away from the water, you know, but still in a nice area. It's the best school district in San Diego is Poway School District. I live in Poway, which is a suburb of San Diego. And the Poway School District covers five major zip codes, which is Poway, Rancho Bernardo, Carmel Mountain Ranch, Ranch of Penasquitos, and Scripps Ranch and Forest Ranch. But that is that $300,000 one bedroom is about the best kind of like middle class quality neighborhood, quality school district, but further away from the water. So location, you know, is a little bit better in terms of price because it's not so close to the water. But that's about the best you're going to get for $300,000. Now you start going into, you know, cheaper neighborhoods or less desirable neighborhoods. The school districts aren't so good. Yeah, you might be able to find, you know, $150,000 condo, $200,000 condo, but it's going to be 500-600 square feet, and you're going to be, you know, hoping you don't get shot on your way home. You know, maybe drug deals out your front yard. Coming from Arizona, I'm still somewhat in sticker shock. I'm used to it now, but there's still just a kind of amazement of how people can afford to buy homes here. I would definitely say there's probably a lot more dual income families here. You just can't make it without dual income here, which I don't know how we've done it, but Darcy's stayed home with our boys, thankfully, and you know we've been able to you know, be a rare breed of people that can live off of one income. But it's hard. It's very difficult.
You find that a lot of people have multiple families in one home, so it's more than two incomes just because of the cost of living there is so expensive?
No, I haven't seen as much of that going on. I would say the most assistance I've seen is usually parents helping kids, you know, buy their first home. But other than that, typically the dual income is plenty. I mean, I feel like a $40,000 or $50,000 a year job is easy to come by here. You know, you see a lot more six-figure incomes, I think, here than probably a lot of metropolitan areas. There's definitely a high degree of tech and health here. We're also a huge military town. About a third of all jobs are military related. You know, you have a lot of military that now are sometimes coming and going, but they do get, you know, military benefits as far as like housing supplements and things like that. So sometimes that can help with the burden of it. I think there is just some higher incomes here overall, but it's just, when you think about buying a home for $750,000, and you don't even have, you know, your own space. You're attached to another person, that, you know, and it's a 1979 build, kind of a cookie cutter community. Man, you know,
right.
It blows my
right.
mind. You know, I would think that I could be on an acre of land and not be able to see my neighbors for that price, but not here. You know?
It's almost like the stories when people say, well, if I retire, I'm going to go down to Costa Rica and I could live for a dollar a day like a king.
Yes, right.
So it's almost similar when somebody in California takes off to Arizona and they buy a huge mansion for the same price they were living in a shack, you know?
Yes, exactly.
You're not alone when it comes to not seeing a solution. I mean, most of the experts that love to give their opinion all the time don't seem to have one either. I mean, there was an article that came out yesterday that there's a huge shortage of construction starts nationwide, and they're at a 60-year low. And the only reason why they said 60 is because that's when they started keeping records. The nationwide problem, and the reason why they stated that the inventory and the starts were so low is because the cost, it was the three L's. Mitch Rochelle from PricewaterhouseCoopers has been saying this for quite some time, and I'm glad the article actually backed him up. And it's the three L's. It's lumber, labor, and land. And because those costs have gotten so high that the new home builders aren't building. And like you said, when they are, they need to have a product that's at least $1 million plus in order to make a profit.
Yep. Well, I think what's ultimately going to slow everything down is, you know, rising interest rates, you know, because right now, like even for that $750,000 townhome that I was mentioning before, you know, there's multiple offers on that place, you know, five offers, six offers. And now I think what ends up happening is there becomes fewer offers on each home as interest rates rise because people can't afford that price point anymore.
Right.
So then there, you know, now that's going to drive more demand for lower price homes. So if there's no inventory for lower price homes, but there's no buyers for higher price homes, the only way that we can accommodate both is they're going to have to come down in price to meet those buyers. But even so, it's like, you know, then the cycle just continues, right? I don't know if that, you know, is ultimately a solution, but I think it'll at least solve some of the increasing unaffordability. but it still didn't necessarily solve the inventory issues.
Right, right. The inventory issue, you need more product to sell. That just doesn't seem like in a lot of areas it's going to be an option. So because you're making more households, you're making more people. So at some point they've got to go somewhere. So unless they're moving out, but then it's just this catch 22 of a market that we've not ever been in before. And there's a lot of moving parts to it. So it's not something that for years you could take a broad stroke and say, oh, well, this is how it's going in the whole country. It's very specific in each region. Even each city is very different. And even in that city, certain areas are drastically different from one part of the town to the other. And there's all these new compensating factors and moving parts and problems that I don't know. We'll see what happens. And everybody keeps plugging along and doing what they got to do. So I guess the good thing is, though, when you have all inventory issues like this, the strong shall survive, and only the good agents who are really doing what they are supposed to be doing, that are working hard at it every day, that aren't doing it part-time, that really are knowledgeable and professional, those are the ones that are still selling. So you're a lot of the competition, numbers-wise, moving to other forms of work, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. An interesting stat about San Diego realtors is 22,000 licensed agents here. And last year, only 3,400 of them sold at least six houses. So, there's definitely the 90-10 rule, not even the 80-20. And usually those ones, if you the only way to survive here, is either A, it's not your primary source of income and you can afford to, maybe you have a spouse that is full-time and you can afford to just sell a handful of homes. But if you're going to make any kind of decent living here selling real estate, you certainly have to do it full-time and you have to be attacking it daily and learning daily, studying the market, studying your trade, your craft, and just being a student of the game constantly. You can't phone it in, it's definitely a lot of effort.
Well, and to put things in a perspective here, yesterday I got some statistics on our agents, and there's 84,500 agents that are licensed in Arizona.
Oh my gosh.
Right? That's the whole state. But because, everybody here has their license. You can't throw a stone without hitting three real estate agents, in any group of people. And there could be a thousand of people.
But a funny stat, or to go along with that, is even I'm licensed in Arizona still.
Right. You're part of that number. So, 84,500 real estate agents have their license. Only 6,500 are actively selling, which means that they have sold more than one or two deals a year.
Wow, that's crazy.
But you guys, 6,500 are active and have sold at least one or two deals a year. So that means that all those other people are just kind of hanging out, or they just have the license. But only 6,500 are one to two. The numbers that you gave, their minimum was six, right? So at least they're making the ones that are making the minimum of six. And if you do the math, okay, that's a decent amount of money. These 6,500, they've lowered the bar. Right. Probably because they needed to get the numbers to a certain point where it wasn't embarrassing compared to the 85, right? Or the 84,000.
Because
if they said, okay, how many sold one? They're like, we can't put that number out there because it doesn't look good. So they put, one to two.
Right.
So we had to up it a little. So, or they lowered it rather down to one. So it's, so when you put those things in a perspective too, it's really important for people who are looking to hire a real estate agent to really make sure that person is doing it full time, that they know what they're doing and they're not just doing the song and dance, or they're not a family member that you feel obligated to use because you're dealing with a lot of money. And it doesn't matter the state, it doesn't matter the city, but you need to have somebody who really does know the area and they can best represent you to make sure that they are active in what's going on, because it's you're dealing with a lot of money. It's not like you're buying a shirt at the store,
Right. Well, absolutely. Well, that's why, not even just the area, because some people know the area, but they don't know a darn thing about the contract. And the contract is what can make or break you in terms of costs or, you know, what your obligations are, or prevents you from getting sued. So I'm a big believer in understanding what you're having your clients sign and being able to eloquently explain it so that they feel comfortable about it. Just because you know an area, you know, you might know prices and whatnot, but I've seen a lot of agents who just don't even know how to do their paperwork properly, which just blows me away.
Well, you would think that that is their number one objective or their goal, something that they should be really familiar with, is the contract. And I've seen a lot of problems with contracts over the past 20 years that I've been in different roles on all different sides of the transaction. And I would say that overall, that was the biggest downfall, was the agents and the quality of the contract, the execution of the different time periods and layers that are within it. At least Arizona is not as complex of a contract and laws and rules and closure periods and statutes and timeframes as California. But your contract is it's very layered, and you have state disclosures because of all the environmental and
yes,
the other issues that really need to know your stuff with those California contracts, because you could run into some big problems where now somebody is in jeopardy of either losing the house or losing a lot of money.
Absolutely.
I also did want to let everybody know that one of the reasons why you're on the show today is because you're one of our preferred realtors in our Homes for Veterans program, because
yes,
helping people, what we've done is we've created a concept. So our nonprofit, we've identified different real estate agents in California, Arizona, and Nevada that I personally work with or known over the years. Could be anywhere from someone recently that I really, really respect their professional methods, or somebody that I've known for up to 20 years. And I've asked them to participate in the program. So then what we do is we take buyers and sellers and we match them up with one of our real estate agents. They're kind enough to actually donate 25% of their commission to the Homes for Veterans program, which allows us to financially help veterans buy a home or pay for home improvements for their service-connected injuries. So I want to tell you that I really appreciate you participating, and I'm looking forward to getting very active in the San Diego area so we can help out some more veterans. So thank you very much for being a part of our family.
Really appreciate you inviting me to be a part of that program. I think it's fantastic. As you know, we are a big military town here, and so we all love our veterans here, and anything we can do to help them, you know, I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, and I think it's a great way that people could participate. They don't have to donate. They don't have to buy something they don't want. They don't have to pay for a service they don't need. They don't have to spend money they don't have. Basically, all they need to do is be conscious of their choices and their buying decisions, and they have the opportunity to help a veteran who served for them. So the concept,
yep,
is going to allow regular people to, just like I said, be conscious of who they hire, the things that they buy. And at the end of the day, they're going to help some guy or some girl, some man or some woman who served, and we can get them, we can show them some appreciation. So we're headed to San Diego, and I'm glad that you're going to be one of our pioneer guys out there. So I look forward to the expansion of the San Diego area very, very soon.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Dave. So what else do you want to let the listeners know about San Diego or the market or working with you directly, or any tips that help them in their buying, selling, or even looking at investing?
Yeah, I would say the number one thing you can do is prepare. No matter what your strategy is, I don't care if it's buying, selling, or investing, do a lot of homework up front. Don't do any knee-jerk reactions, or don't just, you know, read an article and decide you want to invest or buy or whatnot. I like to work with people well in advance before they're even ready to pull the trigger, whether it be buying or selling. That way I can coach them properly. A lot of buyers are just unaware of all the costs associated with buying a home. They think, oh, as long as I have 5, 10, 20% down, you know, that's all I need. Well, there's closing costs, there's inspection costs, there's appraisal fees. You know, you want to know what your overall out-of-pocket, you know, expenses are, because I know there's a lot of excitement in buying or selling a home, but there's also a lot of stress, and you don't realize it until you get into it, and then you start to freak out, and you start seeing all those dollars flying, and everybody starts telling you that you owe this, you owe that. If you are well-prepared, then that becomes less stressful. earlier you can talk to me or someone like me, the better, because you can put it all on paper. You can really think it all through and understand and feel good about budget and really prepare yourself. And it also gives you, you know, sets up your expectations for what you can afford. You know, I know a lot of people that when they first start thinking about buying a home, they think, oh, hey, I can afford up to $300,000. And they think they're going to buy a luxury home on 2 acres here in San Diego. And they're like, oh, I need $3 million for that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just being able to set your expectations up front will help as well with the emotional side of it. Because I don't care how emotionally stable you are, buying and selling real estate can put some stress on you. And as far as selling goes, it's really not much different. It's just you're on the other side of things. It's what you're going to net. So I know a lot of people, they don't truly understand what their costs are. So I like to sit down with them. I'll give them a net sheet. I'll go through a bunch of hypotheticals. I like to coach them on what they can actually get. A lot of people have a certain number in mind. Maybe they're looking at the Zillows or Redfins of the world, and they think that their home is worth, you know, X dollars. But, you know, all those online websites are doing is just taking a bunch of raw data from all your neighbors. They might even be including townhomes. They might be including, you know, just all the raw data of home sales around you, and then just blending them all up and then kind of taking averages based on your square footage, your bedroom, bathroom count. But if you have unique features or lack unique features that your neighbors have, then your pricing can be pretty skewed. So it's important to talk to someone who does it every day, meet with them, really get a realistic value range for your home, because no home is worth a set price. There's always a window of value on that home, because the home is only worth what a buyer's willing to pay, and each buyer might have their own perspective of what it's worth. I can usually get it within, you know, 1-2% of actual value within a range, and at least if you can have kind of your best case, worst case scenario in mind in advance, you can mentally prepare for when you start fielding offers to understand what you're going to end up with. And then building your game plan for what are you going to do after you sell. I've seen it where people go all the way to where they're practically in escrow, where they're in escrow, and they're almost like, I don't know, well, we don't have any place to go. I said, well, you should have thought of that before you went on the market. You know?
Yeah. Like,
I don't know who's coaching you, but
that's when you go, here's your tent. Here's your tent.
Right. Here's your tent. Yes.
Here you go.
Hey, you might
see you later.
You might have a lot
of
money
in Phoenix. Yeah. But it's Phoenix.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And so just having that long drawn out discussion or multiple appointments. I mean, I've met with buyers and sellers a year in advance. I have buyers on my radar right now that we have a 2-year game plan for them. I met with them. They initially, they maybe had some little bit of credit issues they needed to deal with that they weren't aware of. I enjoy that. I like coaching. To me, I'm not really a sales guy. I'm a consultant and a coach for how to, you know, help people achieve their goals, because that's all I am. I'm not here to try and, like, you know, sell you a widget. I'm trying to help you game plan and navigate, you know, the real estate market. And same with investors. The nice thing with investors, if you're whatever what your strategy is, the investors I work with probably the most are probably the buy and hold investors, because you can still do that even with homes that are on MLS. But it takes a game plan and understanding of all the numbers. And it shouldn't be an emotional process. It should be a numbers driven process. And I'm seeing a lot of investors get emotionally involved, and I have to tell them, you know, you got to scale that back, man. This isn't about winning the house. It's about getting the house at the right price so that you can rent it out and cash flow it. If somebody else is willing to pay more, you need to just walk away, because the numbers tell you to walk away. Trying to separate the two can be difficult for some people. And then also separating that emotion from even traditional buyers when they're buying a home. Sometimes I've seen people try and think of buying a home for themselves from an emotional, personal standpoint, like, I want to love it, but then also trying to combine it with investment. Like, oh, I want the, you know, if I ever have to rent this, I want the cash flow on day one. I'm like, well, you can't, it's hard to combine the two, because anything that you really love probably won't cash flow at all unless you're putting 40-50% down, because those are just higher demand areas and they go for more, and you're buying a home that's bigger. You know, I wouldn't buy a 4-bed, 3-bath, 3,000 square foot home as a rental property. I just wouldn't do it. You know, I would go buy a starter home for a rental property before I bought that. But you're buying for your personal family, and so you just gotta have to try and learn to separate the two. And I think talking with a third party can help alleviate some of that guidance, because it can get cloudy no matter what your position is, whether it's buying, selling, or investing.
Yeah, good points to bring up. People do their homework, but also, like you said, talk to a professional who really understands, because you got to put a plan together. This is not a point of purchase sale. I mean, this is even if it's something that you're not going to have long term, it's an expensive item. You need to be prepared. Everything you said was right on, and great things for people to keep in mind. So, Dave, do you want to give your contact information so people can get a hold of you and you can hear more of Dave's Your Guy from people all over San Diego?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is davesyourguy.com. So D-A-V-E-S, your guy, Y-O-U-R-G-U-Y.com. My email is dave@davesyourguy.com. You can always call me on my cell anytime at 858-225-9711. And I am a texter and an emailer, so you can call me in multiple ways or get in touch with me in multiple ways, I should say. So you can text me, email me, call me, whatever you want to do. Send smoke signals, whatever. I'm here.
A little pigeon with a note.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. So, Dave, I appreciate you coming on. I'm going to have you back on. What we'll do is maybe we'll do a couple little, we'll do some segments where we can get an update on what's going on in San Diego, because it's interesting to compare your market with ours. You know, California always seems to be the trendsetter, whether it's good or bad. So it's important for people to see what's going on nationwide in the real estate industry, because what they realize it or not, it affects everything that they do with their life, and it affects the economy greatly. So when you see certain things happening, it makes you wonder and start plotting things a little differently. So we're definitely going to keep an eye on what's going on in San Diego. Thanks again, Dave. I really appreciate talking with you. And I'm looking forward to, like you said, expanding into San Diego.
Awesome. I appreciate it, Michelle. And I look forward to coming on again soon.
Oh, it'll definitely be soon. Have a great day, Dave. I appreciate it.
All right. You too. Thank you.
And I was speaking with Dave. Dave's Your Guy Real Estate. He's really wonderful. He's a good friend of mine. We've known each other for a long time. He's a great agent. He's a great guy. He's a good dad. He's one of those good husbands. That's why I think he laughed when I said the joke in the beginning. Visit us on our website at everythinghomepodcast.com. All the information's on there. And have a great day, everybody.
You've been listening to Everything Home with Michelle Swinnett.